Bulletproof Veteran Podcast. Thank you for your service.
Welcome back, everybody. Great to be with you on this fine Tuesday. I'm so used to saying fine Monday, but I'm a day late today. But either way, Bulletproof Veteran Podcast is back with you this week. And I got another exciting interview for you. I'll tell you what, I'm blown away by the people that have decided to sit down and talk with me. I'm just extremely blessed. And as we get past Thanksgiving, I have so much to be thankful for. My health. I mean, I had a scary year with everything that's been going on, and I'm still kicking and I'm here. And, I get to sit down with these amazing people almost every week and talk about the coolest stuff. And this week is no different. We are going to be talking this week about virtual reality, augmented reality, artificial intelligence, all that stuff. We have a great company that's coming on with a Specular Theory. I think the co-founder, she is amazing, and she just really is so passionate about this stuff. So to listen to her talk, you get sucked in, and I think I say it during the interview where I'm sold. She's selling it to me, and I'm sold. So really going to have a lot of fun talking to her this week, and I hope you guys really enjoy it. But before we get to that, we have some stuff coming up down the pipe. Again, I'm hoping to plan another race. We did the race for the Stronghold Freedom Foundation to raise money for them. We did excellent, by the way. Everybody who supported that, I can't thank you enough. Those people are doing amazing stuff for our K2 veterans, and they needed our support. And I'll tell you what, the listeners, you guys stepped up, and I appreciate that. We're probably going to be doing something here in January. I want to do a cold weather race. I think it's probably going to be for veteran suicide. I'm working on a charity right now. We'll see if we can do something to send some money their way. But I got a little bit more to come with that. But look for that probably around the January, February. Do a nice cold weather race. Maybe we'll even jump in some cold water and do a little bit of a polar plunge type finish. Even if it's virtual, I'd love to see videos of people jumping in cold water. That'll be great for a little nostalgia. So what else we got going on? As always, we have our Instagram page at Bulletproof Veteran. We have the YouTube page, Bulletproof Veteran Podcast. I told you last week that we've started on Rumble. I haven't posted anything yet, but I'm working on a couple of videos that will hopefully be out here shortly, and you'll be able to see that stuff on Rumble as well as YouTube. It's Bulletproof Veteran Podcast on Rumble. Also, we added Twitter to the mix, and that's a new thing for us, and hopefully I'll be putting out a little bit of content on that, and that's at Bulletproof_Vet. You can follow us there. Facebook, the Facebook page, Bulletproof Veteran Podcast. Everything you guys are doing, every time you like it, every time you guys subscribe or leave a comment, you're helping the podcast. So I do appreciate that as always. But, go to your podcast provider as you're listening. Leave a little comment, a review, give a rating. All that stuff really helps us out. And when I go to people and ask for interviews and they ask, well, how's the podcast doing? We could show them. And we can show them how great that we're doing and how much the listeners really enjoy the information that we're putting out. So again, that's the best way you can support the podcast. I don't ask for anything but that. I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. I spent it with my wife and my daughter. We smoked a little bit of turkey. We had some nice sides. It was really good. I had to do a little heart healthy type thing, so we didn't go too crazy with the butters and sauces and that type of stuff. But it was still tasty as all get out, and I really had a good time with my family. So, I hope everybody out there also had a great, great Thanksgiving and got to spend some time with family and friends, even if it was through Zoom or Skype or whatever. I hope you got to see them and tell them how much you love them and you miss them. But I think that's all we got for this week, man. I'm going to get right into the interview. I don't want to take anything away from this. I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. Just some crazy stuff out there. The possibilities of this VR, AR, AI, it's just endless. And when you hear what this company is doing, I think you're just going to be super excited. So I want to get right into it. So without further ado, let's get into this week's interview. All right, welcome back, everybody, to Bulletproof Veteran Podcast. I'm super excited this week because we're going to talk a little bit about something that I'm passionate about because I did a little bit of my master's work in this, and it's virtual reality, augmented reality, mixed reality, and artificial intelligence. And you might be sitting back dealing with COVID and working from home and all that kind of stuff and thinking to yourself, man, if you would have told me 20 years ago that I'd be doing all this stuff remotely, I think you would have thought I was crazy if I was saying that to you. But it's not. And what specular theory is doing is really just expanding on the world of training and also immersive technology. And we have on the show the co-founder, Ryan Pulliam, and she is going to just enlighten us on everything VR, MR, AR, and AI. So, Ryan, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, as we usually do on the show, I like to get a little bit of an introduction because I always like to know about the people that are behind these companies, especially when I'm lucky enough to have a co-founder on, because, you know, it's your blood and sweat that kind of went into the start of these companies, and it's great to know where you came from. So please, if you could, just a little bit about yourself.
About myself, sure. Well, I ended up starting the company about 7 years ago with my business partner, Morris May. And prior to that, I sort of built my career and background in marketing and digital media, specifically specializing in influencer marketing and experiential marketing. So it's something I've always been really passionate about, kind of, you know, being at the nexus of technology and consumers and brands. I've always really been fascinated by, you know, how can we create scenarios that are really a win-win-win, meaning, you know, how technology can really benefit and add value to our lives as a consumer and how it can bring value to companies and organizations in return. So that was sort of what got me here, that and a huge passion for immersive technology. And yeah, it's been a good ride ever since.
Well, that's great. And the company started in 2013, am I correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So what made you really just kind of fall in love with immersive technology and stuff like that? I mean, from a personal standpoint, you know, that's an interesting, I don't want to call it a hobby, but that's an interesting passion, because it's not something that everybody is kind of into, you know, especially if you come from kind of more of a marketing background. Mm-hmm. What got you really into that kind of immersive technology?
Well, I wish I had more of a philosophical answer for that. But to be honest, it was literally, you know, my business partner, Morris, and I had become friends. He actually taught me how to kiteboard. And that's why we got to like really know each other. At the time, he was kind of messing around with augmented reality. He has a background in Hollywood visual effects, worked at some big studios like ILM and Sony Imageworks and some others. And so he kind of had a personal interest in augmented reality. This was kind of before VR. And honestly, I just went to his house. He told me he got like the first Oculus DK1 when it shipped. And so I just went over to his house to try it. And, you know, as a marketer, I'm always kind of following emerging technologies. So I'd obviously read about it, but had never experienced it. And I'll just never forget, like he put that headset on me and showed me, you know, I think it was like the Rift Coaster or whatever it was called, mm-hmm. which was a big popular demo. And I just had that moment of like, wow, like I was just completely blown away. And I took the headset off and he looked at me and he's like, I think I can create it. And so I said, well, if you can create it, I can do everything else. And I literally quit my job at an advertising agency the very next day and haven't left his side ever since. So I just, so really it was just that moment of being blown away and like, how can I get involved? But also I could, you know, immediately see the impact that something like this could have, you know, mostly at the time thinking about it from obviously a brand lens and kind of marketing perspective, but, you know, it didn't take long to then realize like, wow, the implications of this is going to be huge for every sector.
Right. Especially if you nail the experience standpoint of it. If you get it where, like you said, you have that wow moment when you put this thing on and you really do feel immersed in it, then it's a win. You're going to mm-hmm. win because you're going to grab people and people are going to want to do this. I know my first kind of real experience with it was kind of similar. My wife's boss had one at the office and he had me put it on and it wasn't that demo. It was a little bit of a different one. You had to pick stuff up. You were like in like a little bit of a room. You had to pick it up and throw things. And
Job simulator, I think.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Yeah. But instantly there was that bio kind of feedback where I knew something wasn't, I wasn't throwing something, but the action had weight to it. The feedback that I was getting from the experience made it feel real, made me more immersed in the simulation. And I kind of had, like you, had that same moment where I was like, yeah, this is, we can go places with this. This is something we can really get involved.
This changes things, yeah. Because, I mean, that's the thing, is it really, it's so powerful because every time you put the headset on and you are in hopefully a good experience, you know, you are actually creating a real first-person memory.
Right.
So it's unlike, you know, anything else we've ever seen. And I remember kind of having this thought, like, you know, it seems silly now, but it's sort of like, you know, we all know now, like, the world is not flat, right? So we've been living in sort of this flat world from a digital perspective, really up until now, like on our laptops, our TV screens, our phones, like it's all just a square box. And we've taught ourselves how to create and tell stories, you know, in these rectangles. And there's always kind of been a space between the story and us, like if we're looking at a screen. And, you know, with VR, I just remember being like, you know, it's kind of like that Zoolander moment of like the files are in the computer. And I was oh my God, I'm inside the content, you know, like at this level of understanding. And, but I realized, you know, this is how the world is. Like the world is round, like, and the way we experience it should be that way also. So I think that's what's really exciting about this medium.
Yeah. And listen, I got to give you kudos to walk in and quit your job and, and say, listen, I'm going to throw everything I got behind this. That's a huge, huge gamble. And it definitely takes a little bit of moxie to do something like that. But it's paid off. I mean, you're no slouch. And if you don't mind me kind of bragging on you for a second, you were top 20 women in VR and you're top 101 women leading the VR industry. You were voted into both those categories. So, you know, you might have quit a job, but it seems like you found your purpose because you've, you know, kind of taken over the VR world in a lot of ways.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you. But yes, it's been quite the journey, I have to say. So, kind of one of those sliding door moments, I guess. You know, I think back and now my whole life is, you know, kiteboarding and immersive technology. And, you know, both of those things didn't exist in my life, you know, as of 7 years ago. So it is kind of wild when you think about it. You know, as long as you're open to new things, you never know where it'll take you.
Yeah. And again, it's never too late to try something new. Like you said, you started these things just 7 years ago. So, you know, it's all about taking that leap sometimes. I'd love to get into a little bit about what Specular Theory is and what their product really is, because you talk about Oculus and that type of package, or that's the interface, say, but what exactly is Specular Theory creating? It's more the content, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, well, we're more of a technology company, actually.
Okay.
But we do technology and content. So we're, you know, essentially an immersive technology company that creates VR and AR and AI, anything immersive, software applications for the consumer, enterprise, and defense sector. So it's, you know, it's really a little bit of both. We were built from the ground up for VR and for immersive technology, which is something that's very unique. A lot of other companies in the space, kind of come at it from, they were either already existing big technology companies, but you know, they don't really know how to produce content, or they're not that creative, you know, or it's the opposite scenario where it's a production agency that, you know, doesn't really understand the technology well enough, or it's, you know, creative studios that kind of come into it and start adding, I think, VR and AR as a service, but they don't really understand the tech well enough. And they don't really have, you know, sort of the Hollywood kung fu and visual effects background that maybe a production company would have. So, you know, it really kind of takes all of those things to be successful. And that's kind of where we sit, is at the nexus of that, because we are not just one of those things, but sort of all three of those things. And because we kind of built everything from the ground up, that also means that we put together, you know, amazing, talented team with you know, big backgrounds in big tech and Hollywood visual effects. And so we have kind of this creative and technical kung fu that I think really brings a lot of value. And particularly when you're thinking about having authentic creators, because a lot of, you know, I think what people don't really understand is that a lot of like everything in this medium is so new that you really, that involves like new ways of thinking about things. It involves like new technologies. So instead of creating something new out of traditional means, like you can use a whole Hollywood VFX pipeline as a good example for making VR content. But the reality is that pipeline wasn't made for virtual reality. And right. that pipeline might require, you know, 40 to 250 people working on it, which has a lot of labor costs attached to it. So a lot of times, you know, production companies that have that background, you know, can maybe produce the quality of content that you need and put it in the right format. But, you know, the costs are huge and they're not really leveraging technology the way that it could be. So I just got very lucky that I met Morris, who has this amazing background in visual effects. And, you know, it was sort of his job, you know, at a time when a lot of the Hollywood studios were sending a lot of their work overseas, they kind of looked to him to be the VFX and CG supervisor and say, look, like we need to build more powerful technology so that we can reduce our labor costs so that we don't have to hire and go out of the country. So that was basically his job. So because of that, you know, he's able to build our pipeline and everything from scratch and do it very cost effectively in a way that doesn't require that much human labor. So we can do things at a very cost efficient price point. But yeah, I really, you know, kudos to him and sort of our team and the people that that he's hired behind that, because it's really made a big you know, advantage for us.
And one of the big things that you guys have done is this idea of using the technology for training. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go to your website or whatever to do a little research on the company, the one thing that pops up right away is this partnership that you have with the DOD, the Air Force, for helping them with training. Now, how did this all kind of start? How did you guys get involved? How do you go from, say, and, you know, you're working with Hollywood studios or something like that, and that technology, how do you make that transition to now work in DOD, military, that type of stuff?
I mean, I know,
that's,
right?
That's a little bit of a leap.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that was another kind of thing where it's, you know, about preparedness and opportunity and a little bit of luck. But, you know, we were really lucky. Like the Air Force actually found us. It wasn't something that we were actively seeking at the time. To give a little more kind of company history, I mean, we started it 7 years ago. We had a couple of really big breakout pieces at Sundance and Tribeca for a series we created called Perspective. That sort of started the conversation around how VR could be used for empathy and kind of put our name on the map for that, because Perspective was about taking sort of controversial subject matter and life events and then using VR to become another person to sort of relive the same event through different people's perspectives. But it was a very, you know, innovative piece kind of ahead of its time. So, you know, that kind of really launched us, I think, as a company. And after that, we started working with, you know, major brands. At the time, they were kind of the ones paying for the content and, you know, doing still original content on the side. But we've worked with, you know, tech companies like YouTube and Sony Pictures and Accenture. You know, we kind of won about every category, every award in every category you can think of, that included like best 360 music experience, best VR game. I think we got best branded experience at CES. We won the first Streamy Award for VR for a series we created with YouTube. We won like the Walmart V-Commerce competition, which was sourcing sort of the best ideas and most innovative ideas for commerce in virtual reality. And we were a top 10 finalist in Richard Branson's Extreme Tech Challenge. So I don't really mean to say that as like a braggadocious kind of way, but just more that, you know, we have been really successful. A lot of that can be attributed to our technology and kind of creative, innovative approach. And somehow it got on the radar of the Air Force, which I applaud them for actively kind of seeking out, you know, creative, cool startups and companies. And they actually called us and said, hey, like we've got this program called Pilot Training Next. It's in its second iteration. You know, they kind of shared a lot of the pain points that they were having, particularly with the pilot shortage and just their goals in trying to, you know, essentially train more more air crew, kind of faster, better, cheaper, if you will. But they shared a lot of their problems, and we started listening to them, and we're just like, okay, yeah, like, this sounds really interesting. Like, these are sort of complex challenges. It was actually really good and sort of a unique fit for our skill set of what we were really great at. And, you know, a lot of things that seemed very complex to them, you know, just aren't for us, because again, like, we are, you know, this is all we do. So we started working with Pilot Training Next 2.0 is what it was called, and built a, you know, immersive training solution to teach undergrad T6 formation flying. It went really well. It got great reviews from all the kind of instructors and pilots and leadership. And then from there, they someone had mentioned that we should attend this like particular expo that they were doing with the military. So we showcased our work there. And then that's where we met the commander of the 97th Operations Group at Altus Air Force Base, who saw the work that we were doing for undergrad pilot training. And he sort of immediately championed what we were doing and could see the benefits for how this could be applied to air mobility and kind of working on a major weapon system. So from there, we learned about the opportunity for SBIR, which stands for Small Business Innovation and Research, which is essentially like a new contracting vehicle and in kind of a new way the DoD is doing business with startups. It's something you have to apply for. There's different phases to it. We applied for what's called a direct to phase two award. We had you know, letters of support and kind of our clients at Altus Air Force Base. And so we ended up winning that contract and we did a direct to phase two. And then that went really well and was successful and has led to what they call phase three, which is, you know, basically sole source contracts. So, you know, it wasn't really a planned thing, but again, you kind of just have to be open to new things. And I got to say, like, for the past couple of years, just working with the DoD in general, because we're also working with the special forces too, has just been incredibly, you know, refreshing and rewarding and something we're really passionate about.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the literature and stuff like that about what, like, you guys created like an entire technology package for them. I mean, between the T6 training and then also what you guys did with the refueling training, it's really impressive because it's different than, say, sitting down in a flight simulator. Now, I went to school, University of North Dakota. Big flight school, very big in ROTC and stuff like that for getting pilots, you know, into the military or commercial airlines. And I sat in their flight simulators when I was out there, and I saw that. But there's something about this more immersive technology with this entire package that's around you between the training, the, you know, like you said, you know, the VR portion of it. But you guys outline exactly what should be highlighted during this training, correct? You guys kind of set up, you know, points. There's a whole dashboard of different views they can have and all this kind of stuff. It's not just, hey, we're putting on these goggles and that's it. It's a lot more than that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, we're offering, you know, everything. We have an entire sort of product suite, I guess, that you could sort of use a la carte or as an entire system. And that's really what it takes. So it's not just the content. It's not just the technology. It's really the tools and applications that can be used and leveraged and integrated with their existing systems. So we have everything from, you know, the software kind of platform and portal that manages it all to a VR flight simulator, to having, you know, AI and artificial intelligence embedded in the system so that you can have individualized learning and have a feedback loop that, you know, makes recommendations and kind of caters to each different individual learning style. On top of that, you know, that connects and talks to the courseware itself. So you can get assigned courseware, you know, it knows kind of where your strengths and weaknesses are. So it can make recommendations on, you know, if you have a particular weakness in a skill or concept, then it'll, you know, give you courseware that you should be practicing in order to do that. So yeah, we're kind of a end-to-end software platform and solution.
Yeah. And from the reviews that you're getting, you know, from the DoD, it seems like they're going to continue this partnership. you know, I could see definitely applications for, unmanned aircraft and things like that. I'm not sure if it's something that, you know, you've talked about, or even if you're allowed to talk about. But I could see these different applications. And actually, something that you said earlier, I could definitely see an application from just a veteran side of it. You talked about this, the way you won at, was at Sundance, for perspective. Mm-hmm. That idea of being able to walk in somebody else's shoes, or being able to work possibly with like a therapist or something like that and work through things and scenarios, that is invaluable. If that technology moves forward and through that training, you know, if you could do something like that, you know, I'm just kind of, as you're talking, I'm thinking of things and I'm like, this is like endless. You could yeah. do so much with the military and the DOD and the veteran community.
Well, welcome to my world where it's incredibly exciting and also overwhelming because yeah, I mean, that's the thing is the applications are literally endless. I mean, you know, there's no other medium that allows you to actually become another person. So the applications of that itself is massive. And then coupled with the fact that, you know, you're putting on a device that creates real first person memory so that you actually have experienced something so that you can actually improve, you know, muscle memory and practice and get this training that you otherwise could never have. You know, there's so many limitations in the real world in terms of cost or resources or time. So you can imagine like with virtual reality, when all of that becomes unlimited, like the possibilities are endless. So, you know, I think you mentioned like the flight simulators before, and you know, that's kind of a big thing is, you know, the military has basically been buying these full motion simulators that cost like tens of millions of dollars for just one simulator. So now imagine a world where you can buy thousands of virtual reality headsets for literally the price of one simulator. And you can't take the full motion simulator home with you. You know, it takes up a huge footprint. It requires a lot of people to operate. It's very heavy. You can't exactly, you know, take a C-17 home with you. You can't take the real aircraft. So now you have access to essentially be in the aircraft and do everything you could and couldn't do in an aircraft from the comfort of your own home. So it's, you know, it's really this powerful training tool that has, you know, huge, that will make a huge impact on everything. It's so transformative.
Yeah, I could definitely see, like I said, my ADD is firing off left and right as I'm thinking of stuff. And I'm like, you know, you can't stop, but believe that this can, you know, just change the way we do so many different things. It's remarkable, really. And you talked about even working with the special forces and stuff like that. I mean, I know recently you announced your partnership with Tim Kennedy. Now, mm-hmm. that's not so much for the military. That's more for kind of like law enforcement and stuff like that. Could you talk a little bit about what that's like and working with him and that community, the special forces community that has so much to give and so much knowledge that they can kind of lend to, you know, the civilian world?
Yeah, I mean, you know, hey, like Tim Kennedy is about as badass an American hero as you can get. So we're incredibly honored to be working with him. You know, I've never really met anyone that's more passionate about training than he is. And obviously we're extremely passionate about this technology and what it can do for training. So we just really hit it off when we met. You know, he was kind of sharing some of the pain points with special forces. And I told him about the work that we were doing with the Air Force and how we were solving their problems and kind of, you know, had this capability to train more air crew, you know, faster and better and more cost efficiently. And he was really into that. And there's a lot of things, you know, I wish I could talk about, but I can't. But with special forces, you know, there are certain things that when you're at the level of like Green Berets and Green Beret selection, and you know, you have high attrition because of specific skills or things that maybe someone can't understand. I mean, that cost alone of just not having one person pass is huge for the military when they're spending millions of dollars, you know, per individual soldier at this level in special forces. And not to mention, there's also like a huge recruiting problem. So, you know, you kind of hate to lose someone when they can get to that level and they have so many qualities, except maybe they're, you know, just lacking in one particular area that in my mind, virtual reality could definitely help and kind of pass more people through selection. But yeah, it was kind of through working with Tim on these different scenarios that we started talking about law enforcement obviously with everything that kind of happened this summer with George Floyd and the protests and just, you know, really just the country being divided, you know, it was really disheartening. And Tim's, you know, dad was kind of a famous narcotics officer. You know, I think he even went to police academy himself. So, you know, he's got a huge following in sort of the law enforcement community. And he kind of, you know, he said something one day that just really resonated with me. And he basically said, you know, not to quote, but I'm paraphrased, but, you know, there's so many situations in civilian law enforcement where things kind of escalate or someone ends up drawing a weapon that, you know, maybe ended in a bad or good scenario. But he's like, if you were a Green Beret, like you just never would have even gotten to the point where you would have even drawn a weapon. And right. He says that like in a very genuine way of just, you know, especially with someone with his level of training and what they have access to when you get to that level and like special forces is, you know, a lot of people think it's just about kicking down doors and, you know, shooting people. And it's not like a lot of what they do is building relationships with the community. I would say the majority of the work they do is that, and they're going into very hostile communities, you know, when you're talking about Afghanistan or Iraq and, you know, they have to teach these people how to kind of fight for themselves and protect themselves. And they do it in a way where they're able to de-escalate situations, I just think, a lot better than probably our law enforcement can, just because they have, you know, more, they have access to better training, like more qualified training. You know, I know a lot of people have argued that in law enforcement, like they might say, well, you know, if you're in the military, that's all you do is train. So you have all this time. And, you know, for them, they've got to do it, you know, when they're not on duty and they've got to pull sources and they don't have that much time to train. So, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer for us. Like, we were just like, look, like, what if we could leverage the training that Tim has, the training that Sheepdog Response does, you know, leverage his network with these amazing instructors and the people that we know. And what if we could get the community involved and actually just create the curriculum for police officers without having to deal with sort of the bureaucracy of, you know, government or politics, but just really give people access to the best training. So that's what we're doing. And we're going to do it in a way, you know, we want to put everything kind of on a mobile VR headset. So it'll give everyone access to it. We're working with different sponsors and partners that are going to kind of help subsidize our costs so that we can make it extremely affordable to police. So they have no excuse, you know, not to have this training. And, you know, we're going to teach them, I think, a lot of these skills. It won't be, you know, it's basically training that isn't force related. So I don't want people to get scared. And I guess with your audience in the military, they wouldn't be. But for civilians, I don't want them to get scared of the idea of, you know, Green Berets, you know, militarizing police or something. This is really focused on kind of de-escalation and, you know, situational awareness and kind of relationship community building skills and things like that. So we've kind of assembled this team of experts from the special forces community, from behavioral psychology, from criminal justice and civil rights. So yeah, I'm incredibly excited about it. Tim is amazing. We've gotten a huge response so far from really everyone. A lot of military personnel have reached out to us, the law enforcement community, and as well as some city officials and partners. So I'm incredibly excited.
Yeah, I think you really should be. I mean, first of all, like you said, you know, what has happened this year with, you know, kicking off with what happened with George Floyd and then the protests and kind of how everything has bubbled over in a lot of major cities. And then there's this call to defund the police and, you know, reimagine how police forces should be. And, you know, I'm going to say from a personal standpoint, I think it's the opposite. You need to fund the police more in the training aspect, because I think in most of these scenarios, if you look at them, and I'm sure that you get the feedback from your conversations, that it's most of them could have been avoided with proper training. If the person had proper training, they could have handled it in a different manner. Not saying that, listen, outcomes are outcomes, and I'm not here to judge one way or the other, but the scenarios probably would have ended differently had this level of training, like you're saying. If a Green Beret can go into Afghanistan and build a relationship with a former enemy, say, or a person that has a very large preconceived notion of what you're there to do, And if we can apply that to that relationship between a police officer and a community that he's supposed to be protecting, I mean, it's huge. It's where we need to be putting the money. And when you talk about getting this out to police forces in an affordable manner, so there's no excuses, that is remarkable. It really is. And I think that the people that are on both sides of this argument, you'd be hard pressed for me to understand how you couldn't agree that training like what you're talking about is necessary. Mm-hmm.
You know, thank you for that. Sorry, I get so excited, so I didn't mean to interrupt.
No.
But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's just it. Like, that's why I'm so excited is like we have an opportunity to really come together as a community and sort of bridge this gap with police officers. And, you know, the whole defund the police and everyone's kind of political opinions aside, I mean, you know, we're not going to solve all problems, but there are a lot of problems we can solve that this technology is amazing at that does not cost a lot of money. You know, some of the police officers, and there's some training with these kind of full motion sims, similar to like the military, or sort of projection screens. And, you know, they cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, but that's obviously cost and resource prohibitive and limiting. And a lot of those scenarios, I don't necessarily think that you need all of, you know, you don't really need 100,000 scenarios to practice in. It's like, you just need to have the best teachers and the best curriculum. And you can do that in a very low cost way, but still have high quality curriculum. And I think that's what a lot of people are looking for right now. And I think that's the best place, you know, money can be spent. A lot of what's lacking with law enforcement training right now is repetition and training, right? So even if they have great training, they may only have that training like 1 month out of the year, or,
right,
you know, one weekend for a few hours or something. So that's the beauty of kind of having mobile VR headset is like, you can literally just put on the headset on your own time, even if it's like 15 minutes a day, and practice something or learn something or gain a new perspective that you otherwise wouldn't have. So the more practice you have, the more it becomes this natural instinct, that, you know, muscle memory that gets ingrained in you, so that if you are in a bad situation, or if you've practiced a dangerous or bad situation in VR, again, it goes back to the fact that that creates a real memory. So now when you're in the real world and something bad happens or something similar to that may happen, you know, you react differently because you've already experienced it. So you're not going to have that, like, that first instinct of, oh my God, I'm scared. And maybe you draw a weapon too quickly, or you handle something badly. You know, and these kinds of things, I don't think there is an excuse not to have it. Like, I would even argue for the military and the cities that it's their fiduciary responsibility to invest in technologies like this, because you are actually making real impact and saving lives, and not to mention saving billions of dollars even. You know, what's the price of a human life, or what's the price of one person being, you know, wrongfully killed, or someone, you know, having to fly an aircraft that costs $80,000 an hour to fly, even to train, or, you know, even a Green Beret who, you know, they spend maybe $1 million per soldier investing in. So, you know, it's really a no-brainer in my opinion. I think it's a win-win. It's something that will literally transform and affect everyone and make a huge impact.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. You know, and then when you talk about how you're kind of setting this up, where you're bringing these instructors in that most of these officers would never have any one-to-one contact with, because these are world-renowned people. I know, just from following Sheepdog Response, you know, online and looking at some of his courses and stuff like that, the people that he's getting to do these, you know, you would die to get these to get FaceTime with some of them. You know, even just Tim Kenny, like you said, I mean, the guy's a warrior. He's a world-renowned fighter, sniper, warrior. I mean, you're probably not going to sit down and have him show you stuff because you meet him in a bar one night, you know.
Right. Yes. He's the real Captain America.
Yeah. I mean, seriously. I mean, it's true. But if you have this ability to now augment him into your space where, okay, now I don't have to meet him. I'm going to just have my technology. And now all of a sudden he's in front of me, or one of his world-class instructors are in front of me. Now they're teaching me. And then we go from that scenario into running a simulation of what we just learned in the class. So now I can see it and I'm a part of it, which backs everything up. then you're really going to get people. And like you said, even if it's just 15 minutes, even if it's 20 minutes a day, it's that repetition and that recurring training that's really going to make an impact.
Exactly. Yeah. It is continuous training. And like you said, like it does kind of come down to sort of having, you know, the ultimate instructor and the ultimate teacher. I mean, look, even not even like in law enforcement, like even kind of going back to the Air Force is a good example too. I mean, when you're a student pilot and you're spending time with an instructor pilot, like, or really, I mean, for anyone in real life, like whichever instructor you have teaching you, whatever it is that you're learning, like there's always better teachers. You know, someone maybe gave you like a pro tip that they said it in a way that just completely resonated with you, or they showed you something that was kind of a shortcut that you otherwise wouldn't have learned in a textbook. And that made them really valuable and great as an instructor. And the thing is a lot of times you lose, even that instructor won't necessarily know what they told you that was so amazing. But when you start aggregating all of this together, you sort of build like the ultimate instructor, and you start sharing what those pro tips are, and you have a platform and a place to do that, then, you know, I think great things are possible. Then everyone has access to the best training and the best educational tools out there.
Without a doubt. And that kind of bridges into what I wanted to talk to you about. Like, what's the pushback? If all this is so great, right? So if everything is, hey, this is the way we should go. And listen, you're a marketing person and you're selling it. You're selling it to me right now. I'm in complete agreement with you. What's the backlash? What's the person saying, no, that we shouldn't do that? The only right way to train is in front of somebody in a classroom, and you do it like this because this is the way we've done it for 20 years or 30 years or whatever.
I mean, I could probably spend another podcast just talking about this, but yeah, I mean, particularly I think with the military, you know, there's really like a big paradigm shift that's happening right now, just in the way that they even do business with the industry and commercial companies, but particularly like startups. And, you know, they're kind of moving away from this, you know, having big defense contractors and primes out there. And, you know, but because of that, when they're used to dealing with major companies that work on 20-year timelines that don't even necessarily have accountability for something, like there's just a way that it's always been done, right? And some people just don't like change. There's definitely a lot of people that we've come across in the military who are really trying to change things, not only from like the bottom up, but also top down. I actually had the privilege and the honor of meeting with Secretary Barrett last February at the Air Force Warfare Symposium, me and my partner did. And, you know, I was really, really impressed by her. The fact that she even called a meeting with me and my partner from Specular Theory meant a lot and says a lot, I think, about her leadership and, you know, really trying to kind of change things, you know, from a systemic level, you know, all the way down to our end users and people that really get this technology and want to push it forward. And that being said, like, you're always going to kind of get, you know, people who've been in the military for a long time who are just kind of old school thinkers and leaders. And, you know, some have said, I think they almost look at it as if you're holding someone's hand or you're using the technology to quote unquote cheat, you know, making it easier for kids to learn. But, you know, I don't know if that's because they just want to see people suffer or because they just don't understand it. But, you know, my whole argument is like, I can't believe people have learned to fly planes without this technology. Like the fact that they've just been flying these, you know, billion-dollar aircrafts based off of someone's advice or something you heard. But, you know, so that's kind of one argument. It's just people that don't like change, who've just always done things a certain way. I think another part is just the fact that virtual reality is so new and therefore it's not necessarily a part of most existing requirements. And requirements are basically how everything gets funded in the DoD. So you're kind of having to work with, you know, just learning about how requirements get written. And, you know, it's not always just like an easy yes or no. So that's just kind of another, I guess, systemic issue that we deal with. We also learned about the color of money, which is a term that we also learned working with the military. So, you know, a lot of it's kind of can just be the logistics, honestly, of just the way that contracting works and the way that contracting has been. But I think a lot of people are starting to really see the effect and the power this technology can bring. I mean, definitely with you know, it was something that, that the military was already investing and spending a lot of energy in, investing in technologies like virtual reality. But really with everything that happened with COVID, I mean, it really became a catalyst, if not, you know, accelerated their efforts working with this technology, because they realized like now they've got to train everyone remotely and they're not really set up for that. And VR was like a great example of, well, now if you've got international students coming in, you know, because training doesn't stop and they've got to be quarantined for 2 weeks, they could easily just put on a mobile VR headset and be training. Like they could already be practicing procedures and checklists and everything while they're in their dorm room. So that's opening up, you know, tremendous capability for them and gives them something that they've never been able to do before. So, you know, that's kind of actually another thing that we learned was if someone does kind of push back is we kind of just sit there and say, look, like, you know, particularly for air mobility, when you're dealing with these tanker planes, like that costs, you know, what, $80,000 an hour to operate.
Just to take out.
Yeah, exactly. And then when you're teaching air refueling, you've also got to take out two aircrafts and two air crews, you know, so that thing adds up. Well, a lot of times these kids get there when they get to the FTU and like they maybe haven't even been in the aircraft yet or they haven't had time in the full motion simulator. So they go spend their first ride with their instructor in the real aircraft and they end up spending that most of that time. The instructor is just pointing out, you know, where things are. So it's kind of like you're getting a tour of the aircraft. Well, in our opinion, like nobody should be getting a tour of the aircraft, like using that as their first flight, right? Like you could easily do that in VR and you could practice all of these things in advance so that it really just makes your time much more efficient when you actually are in the real aircraft or even in the full motion simulator. Like we're not trying to replace those things by any means. It's obviously like supplemental, but you know, you shouldn't have to be like learning where buttons are and using that time and those resources when you're in the real plane. Like sort of like you should be flying the plane when you're in the aircraft and even in the full motion simulator. Like you shouldn't be learning where things are. Like you should learn before and then use that time to fly. And because of that, that can make a big difference. So I think they're starting to see that value. So it used to be something maybe you had to have a little bit more of a pitch for, but nowadays, like it's so obvious, like the time and resources and costs that this thing saves. I mean, you know, at Altus Air Force Base, they're training like 2,000-3,000 students a year. They're doing about 30 to 40 flights a day. Again, you know, with the KC-135, the C-17, and the KC-46. So, I mean, even if you just shaved off one flight, you know, per student for like 30% of the class, the math is like you end up saving like hundreds of millions of dollars right there just in aircraft and like fuel costs. Not to mention like you're creating a better pilot who's more prepared and more confident and they get to accelerate and proficiency advance much quicker. You know, you could potentially be saving lives. You can practice in all these different scenarios. So, but yeah, so I guess that's a long-winded answer of some of the pushback.
Yeah. And it's definitely, you know, there's always, like you said, there's always the pushback for anything kind of new. But when you start talking about that money that you can save, you know, the government likes that, you know, they always do, you know, it gets their attention really quick. And like, you're talking like what you're doing with the refueling, you're talking mostly about the pilots. There's also the boom operators. That's a huge career field for the enlisted folks. And, you know, that training is very expensive. It's immersive and it's expensive. And if you can do prep stuff, not in the aircraft, that is more immersive, so it's not just book work, you're saving, again, millions of dollars in another career field, not just the pilot.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, especially for boom operators too, like you're always dealing with different aircraft. So, you know, we're working on some stuff now I can't say too much about, but I can just tease the fact that it's, you know, it's multiplayer related. And, you know, imagine being able to practice with different air crews, you know, from anywhere in the world on completely different aircraft. Like not everyone has access to that. It's usually about who's flying around in your zone or what base you're at for where you're refueling. But all of those aircraft are entirely different. Like it's entirely different if you're refueling a bomber versus like an F-16, you know, versus a C-17. So all of these scenarios are something that will impact, you know, the Air Force, but also just the greater DOD. I mean, like you said, like it's really endless. You know, there's other things that we're learning about, that again, I'm just like, I can't believe people have done this without virtual reality technology, because having to learn these concepts and practice in these, you know, crazy aircraft or tanks or cars that they're riding in. I mean, it's actually phenomenal that they were doing this based off of like 2D, you know, flat pages with words. And, you know, so the cost of that experiment is costly. Yeah. So yeah. It's, you know, and I think that's one, like, that's a great thing too. I think just about working with the military is like, we are really working to solve, you know, real problems. Like, you know, our adversaries with China and Russia are a hell of a lot different than Afghanistan and Iraq. And that requires like new technologies and kind of new advancements and new ways of doing things. But, you know, nobody spends or values like human life and invests more in training than the US military. So, you know, it's really exciting to be able to have the opportunity to solve these problems and work with everyone. You know, they used to, kind of going back to how things like are changing, is the defense industry, you know, they used to kind of just say, here's our problem, here are the specs that we need to solve it, and like come up with their own solution and then put a solicitation out, you know, and then someone bids on it and gets this contract. But now they're recognizing like they don't know everything. They need solutions that can keep up with the pace of technological change. And they're starting to kind of, you know, put out and share what their pain points are and their problems are. And then they're letting contractors come up with the solution themselves, like in the most creative or in creative way possible, or, you know, what they're really experts at. And that really makes like a big difference. So we can actually creatively and technically solve these problems for the military and do it in a way that's, you know, much more efficient and effective than how things have been.
Yeah, I'm excited for where it could go. I really am, because, you know, especially when you talk about partnerships with, you know, some of the more recognizable military members, like a Tim Kennedy, like Sheepdog Response and stuff like that, you know, you see now that partnership, and it will just impact how many people kind of start buying in, because when it legitimizes everything, you know, especially in the public eye, because in the public eye, it can be tough sometimes, because you're doing stuff in the background with the Air Force and stuff you can't talk about, or you can talk about, or people just, oh, okay, you're doing VR. That's great. We thought the Air Force was doing that for years because they had flight simulators. Weren't they just always doing that? No. Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe they weren't. But when you start seeing more recognizable people, and with your marketing background, being able to promote that, now you can get public buy-in. Now you can get buy-in from congressmen, you know, people that actually pay the bills. and
yeah, exactly. You know, exactly. Yeah. We've been, exactly. It's a lot of that is the credibility and authenticity. And, you know, I think we were kind of talking before the podcast, just about how, you know, things kind of happen for a reason, or the stars get aligned in certain ways. And I think that's just what was kind of this immediate realization when Tim and I first met, because, you know, we talked for like 2 hours. So he doesn't even have that much time. He's a super busy guy. And you could just kind of tell, like, we were all just so passionate about how this can be used for training and the impact that can have. And, you know, obviously with his connections and network within the military community, and, you know, even if it's just helping like possible recruits, you know, he really helps everyone at every stage. And I think now with using VR, we can really make that training more accessible to everyone, and really make a difference.
You know, you mentioned something a little bit before, and I wanted to mention it again. It's this impact that COVID has had. You talked a little bit about how that was difficult, say, for pilots and things like that. But have you guys looked into, and, you know, speak as briefly as you'd like on this, I don't want you to give away too much, about applications in school districts for this type of a technology? As we see, New York City schools just shut down on Thursday again. That is the biggest, I think, the biggest or second biggest school district in the entire country. I think 1 million students. So now these kids have to learn what they call a virtual environment, but it's really not a virtual environment when you think about what you guys are doing. They're still in a more of a two-dimensional learning process. They've lost the three-dimensional, because now they just are looking at a screen. It's flat. Right. You know, they lose their labs if they have to do labs. Have you guys looked into any of that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like, education in VR is going to be huge. You know, it's definitely, I think, grown a lot even in the last year or so. But, you know, the best example I can kind of give is, you know, I was never really that great at like science and physics, you know, I think in middle school when I was learning about it, just because I'm a very visual learner and it was hard for me to grasp these ideas like from a page. Had I had a virtual reality headset that, you know, showed me like the periodic table and the elements and like the solar system and all these things in this three-dimensional environment, like I probably would have been an A+ student, you know? So the fact that you can use this technology to, again, like, yeah, not, live in a round world, you know, have anti-flat education, you know, things that are, see things that are true to scale in real life, even empathy. Like, there was some study, I think, that Microsoft did about, I think it's the kids who are like in kindergarten right now. So, you know, they'd be the class of what, like 18 years from now.
Yeah.
But they said a large concern with them is like, they might have like a lack of empathy just because they're growing up in such a digital age with technology and tools. And so it's kind of like using VR to teach empathy, even for young kids, because they want them to be able to have that connection. So, you know, I think education, in my opinion, like, every school should have a VR headset. I mean, obviously there's some logistics with that. But you know, the headsets are getting better and better, like every few months, even, or every 6 months. I mean, even with the Oculus Quest 2 that just came out, you know, they're now down to like $300 per headset, where it was like, I think 800, even just last year. They're getting more and more kind of processing power, and more people are going towards mobile. So, you know, people might complain like, oh, it hasn't really taken off yet, but believe me, like, been in the industry for 7 years, and the amount of changes I've seen in the last 7 years has just been phenomenal and is really impressive. And sure, like, we're still at the very beginning, but yeah, I think, you know, education, I think also healthcare, when you look at that industry, like people using VR for PTSD, for pain management. I mean, they were even using VR for people who, you know, had lost all their feeling in their legs, and they actually had people using the muscle again, like it was teaching them to actually walk and move their legs, which is just mind blowing to me.
Yeah, that's awesome stuff right there.
Yeah. I mean, and it goes back to like, because you are actually, you know, experiencing something. So it really is like that power of like mind over matter, right? Like, I'll never forget when we were first kind of starting out, I was speaking at Singularity University, and this guy came up to me in a wheelchair and, you know, just wanted to try some of our demos. So I showed him this surfing experience we had created with Jeep where you get barreled. And, you know, I just thought, well, you know, everyone loves surfing, like this will be a good one to show. And he literally just takes the headset off and looked at my partner and I and was like, I've never known what it's like to stand up. We were just looking at each other like, what? You know, like, it turns out he's had muscle dystrophy his entire life. So he was essentially like born in a wheelchair. So that's kind of when I really was like, wow, I'm starting to really understand the power of this. Like, could you imagine, like, you've never even known the sensation of standing up, much less now you're not only standing up, but you're surfing. So, you know, to give people these experiences, you know, even hospitals now are using them like for like with elderly patients too, who, you know, maybe can't do as much as they used to. You know, now they can travel the world in less than a minute or fill their bucket list. So yeah, it's incredibly exciting.
Yeah. I mean, I go back to the kind of the COVID thing, and you're talking about elderly people and stuff who might be in nursing homes who haven't been able to have visitors for, you know, we're talking months at this point. I mean, up here in New York, it has been, you know, obviously pretty bad, and everything has kind of been shut down, and, you know, you're constantly being told to kind of keep your distance from people, and you lose that, I don't know, that feeling of community almost. And for people that are stuck in places like nursing homes where their families can't go see them, this type of technology can uplift the spirit of that person and completely change their life. And, you know, it might be the reason that they continue on and really keep fighting if they're dealing with ailments or things like that, because there's like almost a little bit of hope that comes with it.
Yeah, exactly. And you can have that perspective. I mean, I would even argue, like, I kind of wish a lot of people, you know, had the VR experience of just what it's like to be a nurse during COVID at one of these hospitals, right? Like, there's just so many situations where, just imagine being in that person's shoes, like the impact that could really have on you.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's I mean, obviously I'm incredibly bullish about VR, but yeah, I think, I just see the value in it.
You're doing some really fun stuff as well. And something that piqued my interest, just because I'm kind of a new dad. I have a 2-year-old and I talk about her a bunch on the show because she's kind of my inspiration and she's kind of where I draw a lot of, you know, I wonder where she's going to be down the road with a lot of these things that I talk about. And you guys are doing for families and babies. It's more of an augmented reality, correct? It's on the phone.
It's both, actually. Yes. So, okay. So families and babies, that we shortened to call FAB, was actually a prototype and concept that we came up with that ended up winning the Walmart V-Commerce competition, because it was all about how you could leverage this technology, you know, kind of for the future of retail and commerce. So we came up with this idea around baby proofing, because my business partner and I, you know, we're kind of at the age where some of, like, a lot of our friends were having babies and they kept talking about baby proofing their house. And I mean, I was just completely inundated. Like, I mean, I have 5, you know, nephews and nieces, but I guess I'd never asked my brother about what it's like to baby proof a home. But I just became fascinated by it. And I was like, oh my God, like, how do parents not freak out all the time? Because there's just so many things that could go wrong. But it ended up being this perfect example of, like, what VR could do. So the idea was that, yes, like, you'd be able to use your phone and, you know, scan your entire house so that, you know, it knows, like, how big your staircase is and, like, where all the, you know, the bathroom door is, and it can identify all of these, like, hazard zones. So it would first show you all of the hazard areas, and alert you to it. And then it would explain why it needs to be baby proofed. And then it would know the exact measurements, of what you need. So then when you go to the store, like, you know exactly what kind of baby gate to get, or something like that. So we did that as one example, and then we thought we'd have some fun with it where we gamified it and made a game version of it. So the idea was that you would stand in a house and then you would have to point out where all the hazards are and see, like, you know, how many you can get right with on a timer. And it was very interesting, but I learned a lot about baby proofing. But I think that is another great example of kind of how VR and AR can work in your favor to do something.
Yeah. And I think you could work in a lot of applications, even just outside of, you know, baby proofing, but in, you know, you're picking out a couch to be able to see it, like you said, with the dimensions and stuff like that in the room with the colors, all that. My wife would go nuts with that. She'd be happier than hell. Cause I don't know how many times we've bought something and either myself or her, you know, we thought it was going to look a certain way, and then you get it in the house and you're like, nah, that's not really what we thought. Well, we're stuck with it now, is what it is. And
yeah,
we'll make
exactly.
It work.
And, yeah. You know, it's also like we had come up with some other ideas, but I mean, imagine too, where, I mean, just take Pinterest, for example, right? You have this whole, like, scrapbook of ideas and collections, but it's still on a 2D screen. So, like, imagine, you know, planning your wedding or just wanting to host a party at your house and it needs to be great. And you want to experiment with different themes. Like, is it Moroccan or is it, you know, a fairy tale or is it roses everywhere? Like, whatever that is. I mean, just for event planning alone, like, the amount of, you know, things that would be amazing to actually be in that environment and see what it is. So you actually know what you want. Yeah. So yeah, you know, again, the possibilities are endless. I could talk about it for 24/7 and still not run out of things to talk about.
Well, and I know I brought this up to you when we first talked, you know, a little while ago. You know, my master's, I studied a little bit about something similar, but how augmented reality could be used for long duration space travel. My concern was is that if you're going to be away from the Earth for an extended period of time and you actually start losing sight of Earth, you have to deal with problems with circadian rhythm. There is a phenomenon of having nature around you that helps with, you know, it combats cognitive decline. You know, it helps with mood, depression, things like that. These are known things. But if you're away from the Earth for a long period of time in a metal capsule, you don't have that. So my idea was more of a window that you could actually display things on, make it different scenes, day and night. You could have your family in there. You could, you know, do it however it was. You could almost do a package for each individual and they would have screen time. But now that, like, I'm having this conversation with you, these VR glasses or goggles or a mixture of the two would be awesome. You know, and you see what Elon Musk is doing with SpaceX, and you see NASA with SLS, and they're really trying, you know, the Artemis program, and they're going back to the moon, and they're going to go to Mars. And, you know, we keep pushing these boundaries, but there's going to be negatives to pushing the boundaries. And it looks like technology like yours is going to be needed to combat those negatives. Have you guys had any kind of talk with NASA or SpaceX or Blue Origin or any of those guys?
We haven't as of yet, no, but obviously would love to talk to those guys. A little bit with space. We actually have talked to a few people. You know, obviously there's the new Space Force. So we've talked to some people within that. And I know my business partner has like 1,000 ideas of how he could transform the space industry with this technology, which I would have to let him speak to. But yeah, I mean, it's funny too, you say that, because it's like, yes, you need the nature and therapy or something. Let's say if you're in a capsule in the middle of nowhere in a galaxy. And I would also argue that, you know, it kind of goes back to even people now being in quarantine. So yeah, whether you're stuck in Earth in a little box in your house, or you're out in space, like I think this technology can be extremely valuable and beneficial. And, you know, there's some people out there that kind of argue too, like, oh, well, you know, people are gonna put on the headset and like never leave the headset. And, you know, I always kind of say like, sure, I mean, if you watch TV for 20 hours out of the day, like that's kind of a waste of your life, right? But it's not really the TV's fault. Like you still have to be a human, and you still have to make these decisions of like how you use this technology. And I would even argue that with VR, like you're not as distracted, because you actually are, like you're in that experience. Like you don't have 30 tabs open when you put on VR goggles. And the way that you can learn, the way that it accelerates like retention, you know, is phenomenal. So you can actually learn things better and faster, and it will actually save you time so that you can then take off the headset and do things that, you know, are more meaningful and hang with your family and your friends. I mean, there's been a ton of studies out there, like people retain a VR video 33% better than, you know, a regular 2D video. There was another study that came out that I thought was particularly interesting that said the retention level was like 80% after trying a VR session 1 year later versus 20% after 1 week of watching a traditional video.
Wow.
So it really, you know, I think it's just a really powerful tool, that, you know, given the right experiences and the way that you use it, you can really use it in a way to benefit your life, and save time.
Yeah. And, you know, you can make the argument that, you know, people are attached to their phones. So what's the difference there? I mean, I know that I find myself checking my phone for no reason. And I feel weird if I don't have my phone on me. That's what happens. But then you have to make the decision to not allow that to be your whole life. You know what I mean? Put the phone down, go outside, play, whatever the case may be. I mean, look at the success they had with that whole Pokemon Go thing. And that's augmented reality. They had people outside chasing, you know, I'm not a Pokemon guy, so I don't know all the names and all that kind of stuff, but they were outside running around chasing this stuff. You know, they were outside, they were getting exercise, they were doing something other than just sitting watching a YouTube video on their phone. So I think there's, you know, you have to balance all the positives and negatives, and just like anything else, everything in moderation and not overdoing it.
Exactly.
I definitely want to give you an opportunity to kind of tell us how people can get more information. How can they get products, as you know, if there's, you know, an application that a company is looking for, how do they get in touch with you to see if they can get a training package built up, and any other information about your company?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we have our website, which is speculartheory.com. For anybody that's interested in our training products or wants to explore something, then give us a call. Our number's on the website. You could email me. My email is ryan@speculartheory.com. We definitely would love to hear your ideas and hear what your problems are and try and solve that for you. And I would also check out, you know, we have a careers page that has a couple of job openings on there. I'm definitely passionate about working with the DoD. We're always looking for great veterans, people with military experience to join our team. So if that's something you're interested in, then give us a holler. And I think we're at Specular Theory on all of our social media, Instagram and Twitter and Facebook.
Excellent. Excellent. You know, it's been great talking to you, and I've kept you for about an hour now. And I've loved it. And again, I can geek out on this stuff with the best of them. So I do enjoy talking about it, but I want to just give you one last opportunity. Did I miss anything? Is there something you guys have on the horizon that we should be looking out for? Or just any kind of last closing statements?
Gosh, I wish I could talk about some of the things on the horizon, but I would just say, you know, be excited, stay tuned. I think we covered a lot of ground here. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this. I'd love to talk about it with anyone. And it's been a pleasure being on your podcast.
Thank you. Like I said, I really do appreciate you coming on and sharing all this information. I think it's really important what you're doing. And as we realize what's going on in the world with, you know, what new reality might be, I think VR is going to play a very important role, and it sounds like you guys are going to be kind of leading the charge in a lot of ways, you know, military, civilian, law enforcement, however that kind of manifests. So thank you for what you do, because I think it's going to be very important as we move forward.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, for Bulletproof Veteran Podcast, thank you so much, Ryan. We really appreciate the time sitting down with you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Have a great day.
You too.
Well, again, I'd like to thank Ryan for just coming on the show, and I just had a blast talking to her. And, you know, you could tell by the way we were kind of just going back and forth, and, you know, we could try this and you could use it here and, you know, VR for this. And, you know, it's kind of hard to stop yourself when you're talking to somebody like that who is so passionate about what she's doing, because you just want to throw, it's almost like a business meeting at that point where you're throwing ideas at each other. And, you know, it was a fun interview. I had a really good time talking to her, and I really look forward to the things that she's going to do in the future, and also Speculative Theory, what they're going to do in the future. When I know there's things she can't tell us, and my mind can't stop but race and come up with its own ideas of what they're probably doing in the background, especially with the DOD and law enforcement. You know, it's exciting stuff. And I think that if all this quarantine craziness has taught us is that we need to have new ways of training, and we have to have new ways of communicating, and we have to come up with ideas to combat if we are isolated, like we kind of have been for the better part of a year. A lot of us at least have been, you know, depending on the state you're in, there's been different rules. You know, like I said, we were talking about the you know, people that are in nursing homes and how this could be used to maybe comfort them, you know, all these different things. So it's really important that we keep an eye on these companies that are really just trying to make things better. So again, I look forward to just seeing where they're going to go, and I'll be watching. So, again, great to have her on. Great to have her on. There was something that I wanted to mention. I didn't talk about it at the top of the show. Because I didn't want to take anything away from the interview itself. But I want to dedicate this show to Rob McCord. He was part of the Air Force vehicle maintenance community. And we recently found out that due to some health issues, we lost Rob. He was an Iraqi veteran. He was one of the first airmen to join the convoys with Big Red One going up into Iraq during the invasion. He was an NCO during all of that, so even a harder time where you're taking airmen into something that the Air Force wasn't quite used to and wasn't, you know, that wasn't our normal mission. So, you know, to be a leader in that world during such a chaotic time, it spoke to the type of mentor he was and the type of friend that he was. And he will be missed. And the Air Force and the vehicle maintenance community will miss him. So I wanted to dedicate this episode to him and to his family. You know, my heart goes out to them. My prayers are with them. And, you know, we will remember Rob fondly. And I was already thinking about a lot of times that me and him spent together in Italy and some of the fun that we had. So I did want to mention that. And again, this episode is dedicated to Rob and to his family. So, you know, that's it. That's all we got for this week. I hope you guys enjoyed the interview. And we'll have more stuff coming out. So stay tuned. There'll be a lot more interviews and a lot more content coming. So as we push into the holiday season, just be on the lookout. I'll keep putting stuff out. So for Bulletproof Veteran Podcast, my name is Jason, and thank you.